you bribe the right politicians in the right order at the right time, you can trade the nuclear warheads for medicine, and it's not even a crime. $1 on clinical trials, $600 on making you dead. Your leaders aren't evil.
Your FDA is unsafe and ineffective. A drug passes every safety test your species invented. It won't hurt you. Everyone agrees. You still can't have it for another 8.2 years. There is, however, no waiting list for dying. No one blocks that. The testing costs 44.1 times more than proven alternatives and excludes 86.1% of the patients who'll actually take it. For every one unit of harm prevented, the system creates 3,070 through denied access. Here's how to fix it. For every one unit of harm prevented by efficacy delays, the system creates 3,070 units of harm through denied access. Operational safety ratio, 3,070:1 against the patient. In 1962, your Congress decided that after proving a drug won't kill you, sick people should wait another 8.2 years before they're allowed to take it. The drug passed safety testing. It won't kill you, won't melt your liver, won't make your hair migrate to your back. But you can't have it because a committee needs to spend 8.2 years making sure it works well enough. I asked someone why, and they said, "We need to confirm efficacy." I said, "The patient is dying." They said, "Yes, but we don't know if the drug works." I said, "The patient could tell you if you gave it to them." They said, "That's not how it works." I said, "Dying is how it works?" They changed the subject, which I suppose is also how it works. You're not allowed to volunteer for the trials that would answer the question faster either. You are, however, allowed to die. Nobody blocks that. There's no 8.2 years waiting period on dying. On Wishonia, when we confirm something won't harm you, we let you try it. On Earth, you lock it in a cabinet and form a committee. The committee meets quarterly. You decompose on a different schedule. A note on blame. When this chapter says the FDA does X, read it as the 1962 law requires the FDA to do X. Congress wrote the rules. The FDA follows them. Blaming the FDA is like blaming the gun instead of the person who loaded it, aimed it at patients, and pulled the trigger on a 62-year schedule. But what about safety? This is the part where humans panic, so let me be very precise about what this chapter is and isn't proposing. Keep phase one safety testing. It works, it caught thalidomide, nobody is suggesting you skip it. Do radically more efficacy testing on real patients with transparent results. But stop holding known safe drugs hostage while you run the trials. On Wishonia, we don't have a word for preventing someone from accessing a safe substance that could help them while they die. It would never occur to us to do it, so we never needed a word. You have several words for it. My favorite is the approval process. The 44.1 times inefficiency tax. Compare two real-world systems for testing drugs. The Oxford Recovery Trial tested COVID treatments on 48,000 patients for $500 and found a life-saving treatment in 3 months, like a normal species would. The post-1962 system averages $41,000 per trial and takes over a decade to approve a new drug, like humans would. Your efficacy testing system costs 44.1 times more and takes 32.8 times longer than necessary. I showed these numbers to a human and they said, "That can't be right." So I showed them the sources and they said, "Well, there must be a reason." There is a reason. The reason is that your system costs 44.1 times more and takes 32.8 times longer. That's the reason and also the problem. They're the same thing. The 8.2 years efficacy lag. Here's where your lifespan goes to die. Phase 1, safety testing, lasts 2.3 years and tests if the drug harms people, death, organ damage, mutations, serious adverse reactions, all the ways a molecule can ruin your day. This part works. Keep it. Phase 2/3. Efficacy testing takes 8.2 years. The drug is now known safe, but patients can't have it until the committee is satisfied. This is where people die waiting for a drug that already passed every safety check your species invented. What the 1962 efficacy requirements changed. Before 1962, 144,000 physicians tested treatments on real patients and published results. Life expectancy grew 3.82 years every decade for 80 straight years. Things were going well. Naturally, Congress intervened. Phase 1 safety testing, added in 1938, prevented all U.S. thalidomide deaths while Europe had thousands. So in 1962, Congress looked at a system that was working and thought, what if we made this much worse? They added massive pre-approval efficacy requirements via the Kefauver-Harris Amendment, blocking patient access for years during testing. The cost of developing a drug went from $24.7 million to $2.6 billion, a 105 times increase. New drug approvals dropped by 70%, life expectancy gains slowed from 3.82 years per decade to 1.54, a 60% reduction. Time to approval stretched from 2 to 3 years to 10.5 years. Everything got worse at exactly the same time. Every single metric, all at once, the moment the law passed. I'm not a statistician, so I can't tell you whether that's a coincidence, but I did look at the graph, and it's not a coincidence. The 105 times cost increase is rigorously documented. See drug development cost analysis for methodology, sensitivity analysis, and source data. The modern consequences. Even if you think historical analysis is just opinions with footnotes, the current system's failures are happening right now. 1. A cure passes safety testing. 2. You can't take it pending efficacy review. 3. You can't join the trial either, too sick, too old, wrong medications. 4. You die. 5. The FDA approves the cure. 6. Pharmaceutical companies charge your widow $10,000 per pill. I read the sequence several times because I kept thinking I'd got the order wrong. I hadn't. That is the correct order. The system works exactly like that, on purpose, and everyone involved considers it a success because nobody skipped a step. High costs kill innovation, reward monopoly. Before 1962, genius scientist invents cure, raises a few million, tests safety, gives it to people. Like a civilization that wants to survive would. Now, genius scientist must convince one of three megacorporations to fund trials. Those corporations already sell inferior drugs for the same condition, bringing in hundreds of millions a year per drug. The math for the megacorporation. Option 1, develop the better drug. Cost, $2.6 billion on average to get a single drug to market. That figure already includes the cost of the 9 candidates that fail for every one that succeeds, so the 10% success rate is already priced in. Best case, the drug works. You now have a better drug for the same condition. But your old drug, which was bringing in hundreds of millions a year, is now obsolete. You spent $2.6 billion to replace your own revenue stream. Every year the new drug is on the market, it's earning roughly what the old drug would have earned anyway, minus the $2.6 billion hole you dug getting here. Option two, buy the patent, put it on a shelf. Your inferior drug keeps bringing in hundreds of millions a year. Total cost? Whatever the patent costs, which is rounding error compared to $2.6 billion. I ask a pharmaceutical executive which option they'd choose, and they said, it's more nuanced than that. Then I asked which one they chose, and they said, option two. So it wasn't more nuanced than that. The profit incentive doesn't just fail to reward better treatments, it actively punishes them. The best possible outcome of option one is the same annual revenue you already had, minus $2.6 billion. Curing disease is economically irrational. The system doesn't need a conspiracy to suppress cures. It just needs the math. I keep waiting for someone to show me where the math is wrong. Nobody shows me where the math is wrong. They just look uncomfortable and say, it's complicated, which I've learned is what humans say when it isn't complicated and they don't like the answer. Off-patent drugs and rare diseases. Mathematically doomed. The 1962 law made it mathematically impossible to cure diseases that aren't profitable enough. 95% of diseases are rare, a development cost of $2.6 billion divided by a patient population of about 10,000 patients equals $260,000 per patient. No patent equals no funding, because off-patent drugs can't attract billion-dollar investments. Pre-specification kills serendipity, as you must predict what drug cures before testing. When something costs more, you get less of it. I looked this up, and apparently it's the first thing they teach in economics. It is also, somehow, the last thing anyone considers when writing health policy. 95% of diseases have zero treatments, not because cures are impossible, because cures are unprofitable. The best thing a disease can do for itself, career-wise, is be popular. The actual death toll of drug lag.
Economists call it drug lag, which is a lovely clinical way of saying people rotting to death in a queue for drugs that have already been confirmed not to hurt them. Early estimates, 21,000 to 120,000 American lives per decade. But that was just the U.S. A comprehensive quantitative analysis using WHO mortality data estimates the total cost of the 8.2 years post-safety efficacy delay, the lag after drugs are known safe, 416 million eventually avoidable deaths, including years lived with disability, 7.94 billion disability-adjusted life years, or DALYs, of healthy human life deleted. Economic cost, $1.19 quadrillion, 2024 U.S. dollars, reflecting those 7.94 billion DALYs valued at $150,000 per DALY, the standard normative rate used in WHO cost-effectiveness analyses. Even if those death estimates are off by a factor of 10, that's still tens of millions of deaths, and the inefficiency is independently verifiable. The efficacy testing process costs 82 times more per patient and takes 32.8 times longer than proven alternatives like the Oxford Recovery Trial. Those numbers don't depend on mortality estimates at all. Here's a news story from the non-existent Times by no one ever, without a picture of all the people who die from lack of access to life-saving treatments that might have been. You can't photograph millions of people who died from not receiving a drug. There's no body with a toe tag reading cause of death, regulatory delay. They die of cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's. The delay that killed them is invisible, so nobody writes the headline. Types of error in FDA approval decision. If the drug is beneficial and the FDA allows it, that is a correct decision. If the drug is harmful and the FDA allows it, victims appear on television, and the regulator is fired. If the drug is beneficial and the FDA does not allow it, victims die at home and nobody is fired. If the drug is harmful and the FDA does not allow it, that is a correct decision. So the FDA has two kinds of mistakes. One where they give you a bad drug and you die on television, and one where they don't give you a good drug and you die at home. They've decided the second one doesn't count, which is convenient because it's the one they do most.
The most infamous case, beta blockers. Europe used them to prevent heart attacks. The U.S. delayed for a decade, killing an estimated 100,000 Americans, more than died in Vietnam and Korea combined, from one drug that they had, that they knew worked, that they put in a drawer. I asked someone if there was a word for killing 100,000 people by not doing something, and they said, it depends on the context. I think 100,000 dead people is the context, but apparently that's not enough context. After 1962, U.S. life expectancy diverged from Switzerland's, which didn't introduce the same delays. More drug approvals in the 80s narrowed the gap. Fewer approvals in the 90s widened it again. The pattern is not subtle. I showed it to a child, and the child understood it. I showed it to a policy expert, and they said it was multifactorial. I think multifactorial is what adults say when they can see the same thing the child can see, but have reasons not to say it out loud. How the incentives work. FDA regulator decision tree. Approved drug that later shows problems. Congressional hearing. Televised. FDA approved killer drug headlines. Career ends. Pension threatened. Delay a drug that could save lives. Nothing happens. Nobody writes a headline. Promotion on schedule. Retire to pharma job. To be fair, this isn't a conspiracy. It's just a system where the only career-ending move is letting patients access treatments. If you approve a bad drug, CNN says your name. If you delay a good drug, nobody dies on television. So the rational move is to delay everything. And that's what happens. And everyone who could object is dead, which does simplify the feedback process. Dr. Henry I. Miller ran the FDA team reviewing recombinant human insulin in the early 1980s. Mountains of evidence showed it was safe and effective. His supervisor refused to approve it. If someone died from the drug, heads would roll. If people died waiting for the drug, nothing happens. Dead patients don't testify before Congress. I checked. The math. Why current regulations increase total harm. Even generously crediting all drug withdrawals to the 1962 changes, ignoring that phase one safety testing already existed, the prevented harm totals approximately 2.59 million disability-adjusted life years, or DALYs. The delay harm totals 7.94 billion DALYs. For every one unit of harm prevented, the current system creates 3,070 units of harm through delay. The safety net catches one person and drops 3,070. On Washonia, we'd call that a hole, not a net. Clinical trial theater. Excluding 86.1% of reality makes drugs more dangerous. To be clear, phase one safety testing should exclude vulnerable populations. You don't give an untested molecule to a pregnant woman. But once a drug clears safety, the efficacy trials that follow also exclude those populations, which means nobody learns whether the drug works for the people who will actually take it or what interactions to expect. Then the drug is approved for everyone, and the post-market surveillance system, the Adverse Event Reporting System, or FAERS, catches less than 10% of adverse events. So the exclusions create a data gap, and nothing ever fills it. The FDA requires rigorous safety trials. Good. Then it runs efficacy trials on people who aren't sick, aren't old, aren't on other drugs, and aren't pregnant. I read this three times. They test whether drugs work on people who don't need the drugs to predict whether they'll work for people who do need the drugs, who are different people with different bodies taking different medications. Then they act surprised when the second group has a reaction.
I would call this stupid, but I think it might actually be something worse than stupid. Stupid doesn't usually have a peer review process. Trials under the current system exclude patients over 65, most people who actually take medications, excluded due to comorbidities, patients under 18, all children, metabolism differs from adults, pregnant women, excluded entirely, then drugs prescribed during pregnancy anyway, anyone with comorbidities, the sickest patients most likely to have adverse reactions, anyone on other medications, everyone elderly, can't detect drug interactions, anyone too far from trial sites, poor and rural populations. It's like testing whether a car is safe by driving it very slowly into a nice cushion and then selling it to people who drive into walls. And when they die, you say, well, it was safe when we tried it, which is true, it was. Result, in antidepressant trials alone, 86.1% of real patients are excluded. The drugs are tested on the healthiest people alive, declared safe and effective, then handed to everyone the trial specifically avoided. Nobody knows whether the drug works for those populations, what the interactions are, or what the real adverse event profile looks like. This is how Vioxx, Fen-Phen, and Bextra all got approved, celebrated, prescribed to millions, and then withdrawn after killing people whose demographics the trials had carefully excluded. The 8.2 years delay didn't make these drugs safer. It made them seem safer by hiding the danger behind an exclusion list. Testing drugs only on unrepresentative volunteers to prove they work is like testing parachutes only on the ground. The parachute worked perfectly, by the way. It just wasn't falling at the time. No long-term outcome data. Data collection can be as short as several months. You'd take the drug for 40 years. The gap between these two numbers is where side effects live. Nobody checks. It's like reviewing a marriage based on the wedding. Pre-specification requirements kill innovation. The regulations require drug developers to predict exactly what a treatment will cure before testing it on humans. You must know the answer before you're allowed to ask the question. I asked if this was how science works, and they said it's how regulatory science works, which I think means no, but we gave it the same name. In 2007, NDRI showed that its immunotherapy drug, Provenge, significantly reduced deaths from prostate cancer. The FDA advisory committee agreed it worked. Then the FDA rejected it anyway. Not because it didn't save lives, because NDRI filled out the wrong form about which lives it was planning to save. People stopped dying wasn't good enough. The paperwork predicting that people would stop dying wasn't filed in the right order. 3 more years and another trial were required. During those 3 years, people who could have stopped dying continued dying, but at least the forms were correct. On Wishonia, we have a saying, the gravestone was filed on time. It means someone prioritized procedure over the thing the procedure was supposed to protect. We retired the saying because it kept applying to too many situations. You could use it daily. Due to these additional costs, NDRI filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, so the approval process killed the patients, then killed the company trying to save them. You have a phrase for this, killing two birds with one stone. Although in this case, the stone was paperwork, and there were considerably more than two birds. But you can't count the dead birds who would have been cured by a company you bankrupted. The blinding catch-22, how knowing a drug works proves it doesn't. MDMA was synthesized in 1912. By the 1970s, therapists were using it to treat trauma, and an estimated 500,000 doses were administered in therapeutic settings. In 1985, the government scheduled it. In 1986, Rick Doblin founded the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, or MAPS, to get it approved for PTSD. 38 years and over $140 million in philanthropic funding later, they ran two successful Phase 3 trials. 67% of participants no longer met the diagnostic criteria for PTSD. The drug worked. Veterans with treatment-resistant PTSD got better. The FDA's own advisory committee reviewed the data. They voted 9-2 that it wasn't effective. The problem, patients could tell they'd taken MDMA, because MDMA makes you feel things, which is how it treats PTSD, which is the point. About 90% of participants in the drug group correctly guessed they weren't on placebo. The FDA called this functional unblinding and said it invalidated the results.
I want to make sure I understand the logic. The drug works by making you feel profoundly different. The FDA requires that you not know whether you feel profoundly different. If you notice that you feel profoundly different, the trial fails, because you weren't supposed to notice. The drug's mechanism of action is, itself, a protocol violation. This is not a fixable design problem. You cannot double-blind a drug whose therapeutic effect is that the patient feels it working. The FDA knows this. They granted MDMA breakthrough therapy designation in 2017, signaling that yes, this looks promising, please spend another 7 years and tens of millions of dollars on phase 3 trials. Then they rejected it for a property of the molecule that was evident before the trials began. On Wishonia, if you tell someone to build a house and then condemn it for having walls, you owe them a house. Here, you owe them nothing. The veterans kept their PTSD, the FDA kept its process, everyone kept exactly what they had, which was the problem in the first place. Meanwhile, approximately 49,000 Americans kill themselves each year, including 6,400 veterans at twice the civilian rate. About 13 million Americans have PTSD in any given year, and PTSD nearly quadruples your suicide risk. MDMA-assisted therapy produced a 67% remission versus 32% for standard care. Even conservatively, if half of PTSD patients had accessed the treatment over the 40 years since it was scheduled, the 35 percentage point improvement in remission would have prevented something on the order of 30,000 suicides in the U.S. alone and freed millions of people from a condition that destroys families, drives substance abuse, and fills your homeless shelters with veterans. A molecule that Merck synthesized the same year that Titanic sank is sitting in regulatory limbo because the people it helped could tell it was helping them. I looked for the word that describes letting thousands of people kill themselves each year while a known effective treatment waits for someone to solve an insolvable blinding problem, and the closest I found was process. Small trials are dangerous. Phase 3 trials test 1,000 to 3,000 patients. A 1 in 10,000 adverse event is mathematically invisible in a trial of 3,000. Then the drug goes to millions. After approval, the FDA monitors safety using the FDA Adverse Event Reporting System, or FAERS, a system where doctors voluntarily report problems if they feel like it. It captures less than 10% of actual adverse events. Vioxx killed an estimated 38,000 to 55,000 Americans before this honor system noticed. That's more people than died in the entire Korean War, detected by a system that relies on doctors filling out optional paperwork. I want to be clear, the 8.2 years delay is supposed to be for safety, and then the safety monitoring after approval is a suggestion box. You waited 8.2 years to get to the suggestion box?
A decentralized FDA with 10 million participants catches 1 in 10,000 reactions, includes real populations, tracks long-term outcomes, and provides automated surveillance instead of voluntary paperwork. You have a fax machine and a suggestion box. One of these is a safety system. The other is a prayer with an 8.2 years waiting period. The negative results black hole. Here's something that would be illegal if anybody important cared. 37% of negative trial results are published. 94% of positive trial results are published. Approximately $100 billion is wasted annually repeating failed experiments. Companies are allowed to hide when drugs don't work. Restaurants can't hide when they fail a health inspection. I checked this twice because I thought I was wrong, but I wasn't. A sandwich has more regulatory transparency than chemotherapy. I don't know what to do with that information, but I've had it for 3 days now and it won't go away. Company,
We tested this drug.
Regulator, did it work?
Company, we tested this drug.
Pharmaceutical companies bury negative results deeper than Jimmy Hoffa. Other companies waste billions testing the same dead ends. Your insurance premiums fund this magnificent inefficiency. It's like casinos only having to report when people win. Actually, I think casinos do have to report when people win, so drugs get less honesty than gambling. I keep finding these comparisons, and they keep getting worse. Countries that don't have our safety. Japan gives conditional approval after phase two, with real-world data collection. Time to patient, 2 to 3 years. Americans fly there for treatment. The EU lets terminal patients access experimental drugs at a doctor's discretion. I asked the FDA what might go wrong, and they said the patient could die. The patient is already dying. Yes, they said, but they could die differently. I waited for the rest of the sentence, but that was it. Right to try, US, passed despite FDA opposition. The FDA made it effectively impossible to use. The law says you can ask a manufacturer for their experimental drug. The manufacturer can say no. They almost always say no because the law provides no liability protection, no funding mechanism, and no insurance coverage. So right to try means right to ask a corporation for a favor while dying. Corporations said no. Patients helped, fewer than 200 total. Patients wanted help, tens of thousands. On Washonia, right to try is just called rights. The fact that your species needed a special law to allow dying people to take known safe drugs and then made the law effectively unusable is the most human thing I've ever observed. You named it right to try. The name was accurate, which was so unusual for your species that it should have been suspicious, and it was. The law doesn't work. The naming convention holds. The COVID test fiasco. January 2020. WHO develops COVID test. World starts using it. February. FDA blocks all non-CDC tests to ensure quality. The CDC tests were contaminated. Private labs begged to help. Late March, the FDA finally allows other tests after thousands die. The only approved tests didn't work. The unapproved ones did. The FDA blocked the ones that worked to ensure the quality of the ones that didn't. I've written this paragraph 4 times now, and it keeps sounding like I'm making it up, but I'm not. That is what happened. In order. On purpose. The bottom line. To be fair to the FDA, the system does eventually approve most good drugs. So if you think about it, the system works. Unless you were one of the people who died waiting, in which case the system worked slightly less well for you specifically. But you're dead, so you can't complain, which means the system has a 100% satisfaction rate among living participants. That's actually quite impressive if you don't think about it. It is not a safety system. It is a filing system that produces corpses as a byproduct. The only thing missing is the political will to admit that a law signed before the Beatles existed might not be the pinnacle of pharmaceutical regulation. The Beatles broke up. The law didn't. Draw your own conclusions. Technical analysis. For the full quantitative analysis, including methodology, sensitivity analysis, and source data, warning contains numbers large enough to make you physically ill, see invisible-graveyard.waronddisease.org. P.S. The FDA will likely object to this chapter. Estimated response time, 12 to 15 years, pending Phase 3 review and proper documentation. Thank you so much for taking the time to end war and disease. But if at any point you decide you're too busy, please press the share button on your glowing rectangle in case one of your friends have a free afternoon to end war and disease instead. And if you're too busy to even do that, please leave a really, really, really good rating and review so we overcome the pro-war algorithmic suppression and find someone with more spare time for ending wars and diseases. The good review doesn't have to be true. They don't check.
But if you're too busy to even do that, the absolute least you could do is take 15 seconds to go to warondisease.org and make your wishocratic allocation, telling us what fraction of humanity's resources should go to explosions versus clinical trials, and vote. If the 1% treaty passes, your vote will be personally to blame for saving 38.4 lives and preventing 6.9 million hours of suffering. Go to warondisease.org right now. Love you. Bye.